Well, good morning. How's everybody today?
Great.
Great. Awesome. Now, I'm Brent. I'm the lead pastor here. And next Sunday's kind of a big day for football fans. Anybody excited? We have Super Bowl coming up. Okay, the Chiefs fans have represented here today. The Packers fans are still sad and in mourning. Some of us, not so much that the Packers didn't make it, but that's okay. No, next week is the Super Bowl, and one of the things I love about the Super Bowl is that, you know, really regardless of the teams that are in it, everybody loves the commercials, right? I mean, the commercials are typically what we, rooting for the commercials, you know, but in our Netflix binging DVR recording everything world, we very seldom watch commercials anymore. I mean, I at least for me. In fact, I find if I'm watching a television show that's actually live at that time and I can't skip the commercials, I get agitated because, I mean, after all, who wants to watch the commercials? But occasionally there are some commercials that catch our attention, maybe make you laugh, maybe make you cry, maybe, you know, evoke that emotional response. Well, recently there were a series of commercials, a campaign that AT&T Wireless came out with, and you may have seen them. It's the tagline, "Just okay is not okay." You seen any of those? If you hadn't, I wanted to share a few of those with you this morning. Watch the screen.
Saying here, the brakes don't stop it, something will.
That's not a real saying.
It is around here. I wrote it.
Just okay is not okay.
Have you ever worked with Dr. Francis?
Oh yeah, he's okay.
Just okay?
Guess who just got reinstated?
Well, not officially. Nervous?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. Don't worry about it, we'll figure it out.
I'll see you in there.
Just okay is not okay.
Aren't scared. Don't be. I'm perfectly okay at this.
Just okay?
First time is always hard.
Does it get any easier?
I'll let you know. Nope, the second time is just as scary.
Just okay is not okay.
I love those commercials. What's funny is I'm actually an AT&T Wireless customer, and if you are in the Des Moines area, it's not even okay. It's just, amen, there you go. I got a witness out there, amen. You know, I love creative commercials. I love these things that make you think. And you may be thinking, what in the world does this have to do with church? And you're exactly right. We're going to figure this out. You know, we've been in a series the last few weeks where we're just asking ourselves this question. What does it mean to be the church? What does it mean to be a gathering of people that are centered around Jesus Christ, that are connecting with God and becoming like Jesus together? That's what we're hoping that we can figure out, and we're kind of laying this out week in and week out. And today we come to an important part of the puzzle as well, and we're just kind of keep building because I hope you understand that the church doesn't have a singular function. The church doesn't say, here's the one thing we do. There's multiple things to be a healthy church, to be an active church, to be a church that's representing Jesus in the world. There's a lot of different things that we have going on. And today, what I want us to look at is kind of this third important piece of the puzzle. Because up till this point, what we've been talking about, what we've been talking about is things that happen basically inside these four walls, inside what happens with us. So we've talked about connecting with God, and that is worship, and that's what we're doing here today. And we do this kind of as a family. And then last week we talked about maturing and becoming like Jesus, and that's really something we internally do. But today we need to turn our attention outside because the church is really one of the few organizations that exists for those that aren't a part of it yet. We exist not just for us. We exist for those that are outside these walls. But unfortunately, sometimes because of our busyness, sometimes even because of our apathy, sometimes because we look at it and we go, well, that's not my job. Let somebody else do it. We get into a place where we become singularly focused and we think this is it right here, and we lose sight of the world around us. And so today what I want us to look at is just how important it is that we impact our world together. The struggle is that when you've been a part of anything for any length of time, whether it's a church, whether it's a marriage, whether it's parenting, whether it's your job. If you've been doing this for a while, sometimes the shine comes off the apple. Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, like the excitement, the joy, the enthusiasm just kind of can die if you're not careful. And so if you've been married a while, you may find that occasionally you can take that person for granted. You don't mean to, but you get busy and life happens. And you know, and the little things that you used to do to show them they were special, you don't do anymore. Maybe it's in parenting, and you know, the sleepless nights catch up with you, and the speeding tickets come in, and the accidents, and the, you know, the back talk as teenagers, and you know, you get to a place where you miss those special moments of when they would crawl in your lap and snuggle with you. You know, those kind of get forgotten, and it's just kind of like, whoo, let's get to that empty nest thing as quick as we can. Am I the only one? Just checking. Okay, but it can happen everywhere. This can happen where we lose the passion, we lose the zeal, the enthusiasm that we had in our jobs, families, neighborhoods, anywhere. And it can happen even in the church, to where the church just kind of becomes this thing we do. Well, it's Sunday morning. I guess we'll get up and go to church. All right, good. Glad that's over with. Let's get back to regular life. And what we find is that if we're not careful, like the great theologian and philosopher AT&T just taught us, just okay even with church is not okay. It's not okay. But I wonder sometimes if we're not willing to settle for okay when God has called us to so much more. I think we forget the power and the impact that Jesus Christ had. I mean, here's this guy. This guy born nowhere in this small town, from a no-town place, no notoriety, his parents weren't famous, and he just starts calling people, and all of a sudden, masses start following him, and he begins to speak with real authority, and he begins to heal people, and he begins to truly transform lives. And he's killed. He's crucified on a cross. But even then, after his resurrection, where miraculously he rises from the dead, he leaves the earth. But even then, the power of his influence doesn't die. You and I sit here 2,000 years later, worshiping, centering our lives around this individual. What else in history has ever had the power that Jesus Christ had? What else has reshaped history like Jesus Christ has? There's nothing. And yet sometimes when we consider this and the power of the early church, how this fledgling group of people got started and just began to speak and share a message, and thousands came. And it's just this incredible story under intense persecution that this movement continues to grow and it changes everything. And it changed the world. And I think sometimes we've been doing this so long that we get okay with okay, and we forget that we are part of something that is just as incredible, just as miraculous today as it was 2,000 years ago when Jesus started it. This movement should, can, and should still change the world. We need to do more than just exist and be okay. We should make a difference. We can impact our world together. The book of Acts is amazing. I encourage you, if you haven't read it in a while, read it. 28 chapters outlining the story of the early church. It's amazing. The Holy Spirit's doing some incredible stuff in the world at this time. And it gives us an incredible look at what the early church was like. We know that the disciples, those men and women that followed Jesus, they went out to spread his message as far and as wide as they could. But while they were doing this, they didn't just focus on speaking words of truth to people. They also got very involved. They were addressing the social needs in their communities, widows who needed food, collections of money for the poor, sharing with those who had needs. And then Acts chapter 17, we read an interesting story. The later half of Acts is about following Paul, the Apostle Paul, and how he goes around and spreads the message of Jesus. And as he's doing it, he's establishing churches, and he's going back and visiting some of these churches during the time. And when in Acts 17, we find that Paul is with his friend named Silas, and they're traveling around. And we know this is Paul's second missionary journey. There were four journeys that he made, and this was the second one. And while traveling around, he's checking on these churches that he'd started. He's sharing Jesus with more people. And then things began to really heat up. Things were not always easy for Paul as he shared the message of Jesus and worked to strengthen and establish the church and impact the world. People are hearing about Jesus. Lives are being changed. People's worlds are being turned upside down. And because of this, people's priorities are being shifted. And it's having an impact politically. It's having an impact socially. It's having an impact financially. It's having an impact everywhere. And at the end of Acts chapter 16, we see that Paul and his partner Silas are rushed. They're pushed out of the city of Philippi. They're run out of town. They've been beaten there. They've been jailed there. And now they've been asked to leave. And so they go to the next city of Thessalonica. And then that's where I want to pick up the story in Acts chapter 17 today. Listen to what happens here. It says, when Paul and his companions had passed through Amphipolis and Apollonia, they came to Thessalonica, where there was a Jewish synagogue. As was his custom, Paul went into the synagogue, and on three Sabbath days, he reasoned with them from the scriptures, explaining and proving that the Messiah had to suffer and rise from the dead. This Jesus I am proclaiming to you is the Messiah, he said. Some of the Jews were persuaded and joined Paul and Silas, as did a large number of God-fearing Greeks and quite a few prominent women. But other Jews were jealous, so they rounded up some bad characters from the marketplace, formed a mob, and started a riot in the city. They rushed to Jason's house in search of Paul and Silas in order to bring them out to the crowd. But when they did not find them, they dragged Jason and some other believers before the city officials, shouting, "These men have caused trouble all over the world, have come here now. Jason has welcomed them into his house. They are all defying Caesar's decrees, saying there is another king, one called Jesus." When they heard this, the crowd and the city officials were thrown into turmoil. Then they made Jason and the others post bond and let them go. Verse 7. These men have caused trouble all over the world. Or as another translation put it, these are the people who are turning the world upside down. These are the people who are turning the world upside down. Now, we live in a world where you hear this idea a lot, where people say, "I want to change the world." In fact, used to, before I cleaned out my bookshelves, I had a whole section of books on from people who wanted to change the world, leaving their job to go do this, a teenager who'd done this, all these books of people wanting to change the world. And I think that is very admirable. But what I find interesting about the early church and the movement of Jesus is that nowhere, no time, was there ever a meeting where people sat down and said, "You know what? Let's change the world. Let's go out and let's turn the world upside down." They didn't do that. There's something that I think is very significant here, because I think it goes down to and gets down to what is the focus of what we are trying to do. You see, I don't dismiss all the great things that other organizations are trying to do. They're doing wonderful things in the world, but when it gets down to it, what is the sole purpose, the sole reason, what is the sole focus for that organization or that gathering of people? And yeah, it could be to end poverty, which is great. It could be to clothe people, which is great. It could be to help kids and women in need, which is great. But what is it that separates the early church and the church today from everything else? And it is the focus. Because even though we want to change the world, we don't approach it as, "Let's change the world." We focus on Jesus. And Jesus is the center of everything we do. And it doesn't matter if you look back and you see what motivated Peter to speak to thousands of people. It doesn't matter if you look at what caused Stephen to be stoned, or for Peter to go and reach to people outside his race, or to set Paul off on all these journeys. There was never this moment they said, "Let's do something, let's build an organization." All the time, everything they did began with their focus being on Jesus. If you want to have impact, we have to have the right focus. You see, we see men and women who came face to face with the reality of Jesus Christ, the promised one, the Messiah, who came to show God's love and bring about a new way of doing things, a new way of life, to institute, to inaugurate the new kingdom of God and invite us to be citizens of that kingdom. And when these men and women all throughout history have encountered the living Jesus, it was impossible for their lives to stay the same. It compelled them to be different, not just because they wanted to be, but because they were different. You see, when we encounter the living Jesus Christ, it doesn't just make us want to be better, we're made better. The Bible tells us that when we come to follow Jesus, we are new creations. The old has passed away, but the new has come. And so we don't have to force ourselves to go make an impact. We force ourselves to just follow Jesus. And that's it, because he's already done the work for us on the inside. And what Jesus had done in their lives, what Jesus has done in our lives, is something worth sharing. You see, they wanted to open up their homes. They wanted to grow and mature in faith. They wanted others to have the same experience with Jesus that they had had. And they wanted to help alleviate the suffering and the pain of those around them. You see, there's a difference between just saying, let's change the world, and just living the way that Jesus has empowered us to live. We don't have to force something to happen if we just allow Jesus to live through us, if we live as citizens of his kingdom. And when we all become more like Jesus together, like we talked about last week, things will be different. Your home will be different. Your job will be different. Your neighborhood will be different. I mean, just pause and think for a moment. If we all lived like Jesus, how different would it be? I mean, think, what did Jesus say? Jesus called us to this radical existence where he said things like, be merciful, be peacemakers. He taught you that when someone slaps you on one side of the face, do you know what you do? You take your fist and you beat them down. No. I'm just making sure you're paying attention. What did he say? He said, when somebody slaps you on the cheek, what do? You turn them and give them the other one. There was a custom where a Roman soldier could compel you to carry their equipment for 1 mile. And this was very common at the time. And Jesus used it so brilliantly as an example. He said, you know what? If that Roman soldier grabs you and says, hey, carry my stuff for 1 mile. You were compelled to do that. And he said, you know what? When you get to the end of that 1 mile, pick it up and say, I'm going mile number 2. The first one I had to do, the second one I want to do to serve you. How different is that from what we see and hear? Jesus said, if somebody sues you for your shirt, give them your coat as well. Wow. There's a radical reorientation that takes place when we follow Jesus. Jesus said, love your enemies. He said, pray for those who persecute you. Be quick to listen, slow to speak. Oh, couldn't we use some of that? Even among those that disagree with you. He says live by a different ethic, different sexual ethic than those in the world. And he says to us, he says, as Christ followers, do not find your identity in your politics. Do not find your identity in your race. Do not find your identity in your nationalism. He says, find your identity in him, the one who made you. And the motivation behind this isn't to be featured in a magazine or interviewed by Oprah. The motivation is to do this because Jesus has changed us. We are new, and he lives through us. And that's the way we should be working to get to. It doesn't happen all at once. It's progressive. But hopefully today, tomorrow, I look more like Jesus. And when I do, when I'm living more like Jesus tomorrow, my home is better, my job is better, my neighborhood is different because I am different. Jesus used the metaphor of salt to describe his followers. In Matthew 5:13, he says, you are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. I wonder sometimes if we're settling for okay, and if we've lost that passion for what the church can and should be in the world, if we haven't lost a little bit of our saltiness. I get it. Sometimes we're a little embarrassed. Anybody ever get a little embarrassed by the church? Mm-hmm. That's okay. I do too. It's a safe place here. We think about where the church has been. We think maybe we see people that represent, I use air quotes for that because they don't represent me, but they're out on the talking head shows and they, you know, saying, well, Jesus said this and does this. And you're like, not the Jesus I know. I get it. But we are called to be salt. Do you realize that the world is a better place because we are in it? Because the church is here. And yeah, we might need to do a better job of that sometimes, but the world should be better because we're here. But for this to happen, it must begin not with just, hey, let's change the world. It always comes back to say, Jesus is the middle. He's the focus. He's the hub that everything we do centers around. And as we go out of this place, we're going to do everything we can to live like him. Impact doesn't just mean the right focus, but it also means inconvenience. Now, this is where we begin to meddle a little bit, and I hope that's okay. But when we begin to live a Jesus-centered life, let me tell you, not everyone is going to be happy about it. Maybe you're not going to be happy about it, because impact means inconvenient. There will be times when being salt in the world means we live differently, socially, what might be culturally acceptable to some, politically expedient to others, or religiously prudent. It's going to call us to step out of those things. It may call us to live differently. You see what happened in the first century. Paul went in and he was reasoning with them about who the Messiah was. Did you catch that? He wasn't boycotting funerals and holding picket signs. He wasn't throwing rocks at people and trying to do anything. He goes into the synagogue and he begins to talk to people in the community and he says, let me tell you why Jesus is the one I think you should follow. That's it. That's it. And just that by itself was enough to get people stirred up to say, you got to go. You got to die. And if you think, as being the church, that we're not going to run up against opposition, if you think we're not going to be misunderstood, we're wrong. We're going to face opposition. There will be challenges. And it could even lead, God forbid, to persecution. And no, I'm not talking about the fake persecution we find on Facebook or the talking heads on TV. If you are a Christian in America, stop saying you've been persecuted. You haven't. Period. But it could come to a place where our faith gets on the line, where we actually get in trouble. Could you imagine being arrested for your faith? There are people around the world that are truly persecuted for their faith. That's what happens when we begin to make an impact. It's incredibly inconvenient. In Acts 17, Jason and really any believer they could find were arrested, and they had to pay money to be released. It cost them. You realize that Paul, you look at his story, if you read through Acts, you realize he was imprisoned. He was stoned. He encountered persecution almost everywhere he went. And don't misunderstand what I'm saying. I am not saying that we need to go look for a fight. Don't antagonize people. The cross of Jesus Christ is by itself is offensive enough to people without us adding to it. We don't need to start political fights. Jesus is enough to be inconvenient. Love people. Let our actions and our love for those you are caring for, the ones you're talking to, the ones you're sharing Jesus with, that needs to be the only defense we need. And expect the inconvenience of being misunderstood or opposed. Don't let the fact that not everybody agrees with us about Jesus is bad. It's not bad. Don't let that discourage you. And don't let the fact that maybe every law in this nation isn't pro-Christian be reason for us to say, well, I just give up. Let's change all the laws. They're not changing any political laws at this time. And they were still able to turn the world upside down. That's almost unheard of in our country. You wouldn't think that Christians could do anything apart from getting somebody elected president. I'm so sick and tired of that. Because honestly, that's not the church of Jesus Christ. That's some American bowing down church that doesn't exist in the Bible. We don't need another law to be passed for this church to be powerful and effective. It doesn't matter if your candidate never gets into office ever again. We have Jesus Christ, we have the Holy Spirit of God, and we've got everything we need to be the church God has called us to be. But you know what sometimes we have more of? Excuses. Excuses. And it's time, if we want to make an impact, we've got to lay down the excuses and lean into the inconvenience where it costs us time, it costs us money, it costs you hardship, it costs you stuff. And your neighbors are going to look at you and they're going to think, why in God's name would you ever adopt 4 children? Yes, we're nuts. But why would we do this? Because we want to be, we follow Jesus, and this is what Jesus wants us to do. Don't expect the life of following Jesus to be roses and buttercups and rainbows and unicorns, because it will cost us. It will cost us. It's amazing. We will be misunderstood and opposed. Do you realize that when you look at church history, the season when the church was thriving the most was when it was under the greatest persecution? What does that tell you? I'm not saying don't be involved in the political process. If that's your thing, that's fine. But maybe we need to stop looking for the solution there and get back to finding the solution in Jesus Christ. You see, I think convenience doesn't lead to impact, and that's what we like is convenience. Convenience leads to complacency. And impact means inconvenience. And I realize that is not a popular message, right? That's now, who's in? Who's ready to go? Who's that's not what you want to hear sometimes, right? You want to hear the other. But I think if we want to be people of impact, we got to keep our focus on Jesus, and we got to realize that trouble is going to come, and that's okay. Final thought on this, how we impact the world together, is just this: it means more than intention. I get it. Everybody loves to post things on social media. You're not changing the world by any Facebook post or Twitter post. I'm sorry. No matter what celebrity tells you, repost this and 20 people. Shut up. I don't have time for that. So often we confuse action and impact with lip service. And we think if I just flap my gums enough, that's all that it takes. And to be fair, for far too long, the church was known more for its talk than its walk. We were known for mostly about what we were against rather than what we were for. We can do a lot of things that look like action and they're not. We can do a lot of things that draw attention to us but don't do any good. Lip service, posting on social media, raising awareness, talking about it, all things fine. But if that is where our activity begins and ends, we haven't done anything. The church is called to be a community of more than just talk. What turned the world upside down wasn't just believing the right things. It was a group of people believing the right things, following the right person, and then doing something about it. Now, yes, I get it when people think about the church. Like I said earlier, sometimes we get embarrassed. We think about the impact Christianity's had on the world, and our minds immediately go to the bad stuff, the Spanish Inquisition, the Crusades, the burning people and killing people, drowning them when they didn't agree with you theologically. I get it. That's part of our past that we're not proud of. But we cannot discount the positive things that Christianity has done as well. Many of the advances that have been made in this world are because of Christ's followers. When you look at modern hospitals, universities, science, the end of slavery, public education, these things all were a result of people following Jesus. As I was studying this, I came across an interesting statistic. It said 98% of the founders of the scientific revolution were committed Christians. Do you know that? I thought, what was it like to live in a time when Christians weren't afraid of science? Must have been nice. Just kidding. There's a great book out there called Jesus Skeptic by a guy named John S. Dickerson that kind of goes through his journey of coming to faith and by looking at all the good things that Christianity has done. It's a great book. These things happen because Jesus' followers learned all they could about Jesus and they got off their rear ends and went and did something about it. The Bible shows us from cover to cover that it's a book about justice. What you find is a God who cares about the poor and the oppressed, and this doesn't have to be complicated. It's just a matter of opening our eyes, removing the excuses, being willing to be inconvenienced a little bit and do something. That's all it takes. Looking around you in your neighborhood, looking around you at your job, looking around you everywhere you are to see, are there things that needs that need to be met? Is there something that I need to do? And it doesn't mean we as Christians have to reinvent the wheel every time something needs to be done. Sometimes it's just finding somebody already doing it, stepping in and helping them. You see, here's what separates the church from other organizations. Jesus should be our focus, first and foremost. He is the center. If we ever stop doing that, we cease to be a church. And we as a church, one of our core values is Jesus changes everything. Do you believe that? That Jesus can change everything? I do. But he has to be at the heart of it and the model for everything we do. For years, churches emphasized personal salvation. Pray this prayer, be saved. And then the pendulum swung, and then the mainline churches, liberal mainline churches said, oh, we don't want all that. We want just social justice. Let's do good things in the world. You realize that we as a church, we're called not to just care for one or the other. We're called to do both. We can walk and chew gum at the same time, amazingly. We're here to care for body and soul, and we're to let that impact how we live so that we impact where we live. That's the importance. When you get down to what the early church did, it can be summed up in two statements. They told the story of Jesus, and then they lived it. They told the story, and they lived it. You see, who Jesus was and is, and what he has done is a story worth repeating. He is the promised one. Jesus came, he lived, he died, he rose again, so that you and I could have life, so that we could have victory over sin and death, and that you could live as you were created to in relationship with God. And they lived out that story every day. They modeled it for those around them to show them how they lived. It's not that complicated. Because when we live as citizens of the kingdom, your job will be different. When your coworkers are sitting around complaining about the boss and you choose not to join in because you know, that's not a Christ-like attitude. When that coworker that is annoying, not that I have one, but if that coworker that's annoying just grates on you and you exhibit to that coworker grace and peace and patience and gentleness and kindness and self-control, what does that sound like? Sounds like an oddball, doesn't it? That you're supposed to rip that person. You're supposed to let them have a piece of your mind. Otherwise, you're a doormat. I don't think Jesus was much of a doormat. You see, it's not as complicated as we make it. We just live out the story, how Jesus modeled it for us every day. And it can be simple. You know, we started this morning with Super Bowl, or talking about the Super Bowl and looking at commercials. And you know what? Next Sunday is the Super Bowl. Sometimes making an impact can be as simple as this. What if you today said, you know what? I'm going to have a Super Bowl party. It's an easy invite. Everybody watches at least the first half. And you get on your email, your text, your phone, or whatever, and you invite a neighbor or two to come over and join you. And you may think right now, whoo, I can't do that. That's scary. I can't do that all by myself. Then before you leave today, grab somebody by the arm and say, hey, host a Super Bowl party with me at your house. No, it doesn't matter, right? Doesn't matter. But open your door and begin to love somebody that maybe you've never known before. That's what making an impact is. It's not starting an organization with millions of dollars and ending blah, blah, blah. Yeah, we can get there, and that's part of it, and hopefully we're doing that. But I think when we get sight of the big things, we lose sight of the simple things, and sometimes it's just as little and easy as loving your neighbor as yourself. So let me encourage you next week, have a Super Bowl party. Invite friends over. Find a need at your job, in your neighborhood, and meet it. And if it's too big for you, that's fine. Ask somebody to join in and help you. Don't become complacent. Don't become apathetic, thinking it's not your problem. We should be making an impact together. And as we go to make an impact in our world together, remember this. The same God that empowered the early church to turn the world upside down is the same God empowering Ashworth Church today. Let's pray.